It's showtime.
Okay, Tokyo,
South America,
Australia,
France,
Germany,
UK,
Africa.
Here we go. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. Here we are. It is the third day of March. It's 3-3-2022. This is The Horn. This program's live. It is Thorn in the Side Thursday on The Horn. And, for this Thorn in the Side Thursday, I've been picking out little splinters all day long. Oh, yeah. Yes, I have. But we'll get to that. We'll get to that in fairly short order. Of course, headon.live is where you find us on the interweb tubes. If you'd like to be part of the madcap, wacky, zany, real-time multimedia extravaganza that takes place in the Horn chat room during the hours in which this program is live, Monday through Friday, 5 to 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, 2 to 5 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, all time zones in between the Great Globe Round, well, run on over to headon.live, click on chat room, pick yourself out a screen name and a password, and jump right in. You'll be immediately greeted by early arrivers Squeaky and Anatole, and capably moderated by longtime, inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderator Sparky, who, being a third stage guild navigator, has folded space to become man cave because it's rain day. And apparently it is badly, badly needed there in that particular niche of Northern California. Congratulations on a little bit of, well, I guess it's spring rain for you. And let's see, what's the countdown? 17 days to the end of winter 2000. Yeah. So, nice. Nice. Yeah, hi, I'm Robin. And we will have, hopefully, some Jim Dandy conversation and whatnot later in the program. But, every program here begins with gratitude. And this program is no different. And so, consequently, for this third day of March 2022, we send out thanks to our third day of the month subscribers over at PayPal. That means, in particular, that we say thank you to Stephen. Thank you, Stephen. And thank you to Mick down in Florida. Thank you, John. Thank you, Bill in PA. Thank you to Gene and Ann across the pond, News Ninjas. Thank you to Ralphs. Thank you to Brent. There we go. Where does that leave us? Bruce's Memorial Challenge failed for 2 days running. I recall that happening recently, but it did. And so we are something like $700 in the hole for the month of March. 3 days in. Yeah. So hopefully, you know, if you want to help out, run over to headon.live. You can send your gift through that way. Because remember, this is not a capitalist operation. Everything at the Horn is free. Nothing's for sale. We give the program away and people give back to keep the program going. Thank you. One and all, a la carte contributors, PayPal subscribers, Patreon subscribers, Venmo. Thank you all. The hills are alive, asks Joey. It was yesterday, March 2nd, 1965, that the musical The Sound of Music was released, and over the years I've seen at least two plays and watched the movie several times. I just love the songs from The Sound of Music, such as These Are a Few of My Favorite Things. I don't know how that ever got to be a Christmas song. That just baffles me. So long, farewell, auf Wiedersehen, goodbye, 16, almost 17. I know that feeling. This past Tuesday was my sweet 16 weeks after surgery, so, yeah. I'm kidding, but no, it really was, 16 weeks, 4 months, which just blows my mind. And those are a few of my favorite songs. Yes, I love watching the Von Trapp family and all their adventures. I could watch that play over and over again. Well, however, there is a Von Trapp for Joey every time Joey hears the title of the famous play, The Hills Are Alive, because believe it or not, that reminds Joey of two people by the name of Hill, and one is alive, but the other's passed on, entirely too young. Yeah, Jeffrey is correct. The Hills Are Alive reminds me of both Gene Hill and Clint Hill, and although they're not blood-related, they're related to that horrible incident in Dallas at Dealey Plaza back in 1963. Of course, the assassination of JFK was centered around a hill, which over the, a knoll, a grassy one, which over the years has become known as the Grassy Knoll. Most of you know who Clint Hill is. He was the Secret Service agent who was in charge of the safety of John F. Kennedy. Clint Hill is still alive at age 90 and is metaphorically completely on the other side of the hill in his perspective of that day in Dallas, considering Clint Hill still sticks by the story and the ridiculous notion that a lone gunman killed Kennedy when all the evidence clearly demonstrates something entirely different. On the other hand, Gene Hill, known as the Lady in Red, was standing with her friend Mary Moorman in the island area right directly across from the grassy knoll. Gene Hill, until the day she died, maintained that she and her friend Mary Moorman saw a gunman behind the fence on top of the grassy knoll, and both of them, along with nearly two dozen people, including police and authorities, ran toward the top of that hill looking for the gunman who shot Kennedy. And all of it seemingly delineated and corroborated by the famous, infamous Zapruder film. For years, Jean Hill was threatened, harassed, and stalked by what she believed were her interrogators after she gave her testimony of what she saw that day in Dealey Plaza. She maintained her version of the event and wrote about it in a book, The Last Dissenting Witness. She told of scary people confronting and threatening her over the years in attempts to gaslight and coerce her into changing her version of the events on that day. She mentioned how someone broke into her home, and the worst incident is when they cut the brake lines to her car and she and her daughter nearly died in a car accident. I was so touched after reading her book that I dropped her a line and mentioned how much I appreciated her bravery. Yesterday, we mentioned that Gorbachev turned 91 and Jean Hill would have also turned 91 in February, but sadly she died way too young at age 69 in November of 2000 due to complications of a blood disease probably brought on due to all the stress she encountered from that day in November 1963, not to mention all the harassment she had to deal with for simply telling the truth. She was a schoolteacher who often read to her students of her account and memories of that day in Dallas. Ironically, Jean Hill died in November of 2000 at Parkland Hospital, where, of course, JFK also perished almost exactly 37 years to the day, 11-22-63.
Ironically, Jean Hill had skipped school that day to go and see the president so she could share that moment with her students.
You know, sometimes the youngins just need to stay out of this, but... So the moral of this story is don't skip school, right, Daddy? Yeah, right, Junior, right. I'm not going to get away without hearing from Joey 2 the Kangaroo.
Currently, the Russians have advanced into Ukraine with a convoy. Well, on this day in 1943, during the Battle of the Bismarck Sea, Australian and American Air Forces devastated a Japanese Navy convoy.
Got to get your licks in, Joey 2. Thank you, honey. This has been Joey's Journal for Thursday, the third day of March 2022, with Giraffe intent on not letting Putin become the king of the hill in Ukraine. So there's a $10 no king in Ukraine challenge on the table. That would get us down to $680 to go in terms of our fundraising hole. Thank you, Joey, Giraffe, Junior, Joey too. So, a little history to get us started on this Thorn in the Side Thursday. Of course, sorry, I've got a cup of really, really good decaf. I made myself a decaf espresso breve right before airtime. Wonderful. I was casting about looking for how to start the program today. And, I of course checked in on the war against the innocent people of Ukraine being waged by Mother Russia. And so there's stuff to talk about there. In the city so far that Mother Russia has controlled, there is talk that public executions will begin soon. So there's that. And, of course, I checked in on the attack on some of the most marginalized and powerless children in America. Found something there. But then I realized where we would start the program. It was like walking in the last wilted brown grass from last year before the spring begins in earnest and things turn green and lovely again. And you smell something, and you see something sparkle, and you reach down. Well, you don't reach down, but you do look down, and upon closer inspection, you realize you found a diamond in the dung. Yeah, this is thorn in the side material of a truly top shelf restaurant quality. And of course it has to do, not of course, but it has to do with the nomination of Judge Ketanji Brown Jackson to the Supreme Court. And it wouldn't be thorn in the side Thursday if maybe it didn't also touch upon Tucky O. Rose, Cucky Carlson, and some epic stupidity. A little bit of background is in order. When one desires to go off to law school, one has to take something called the LSAT, the law school. It's either the law school aptitude test or the law school admissions test. I forget which. It's been a while. Hey, there's Yuki in the chat room. Long time no see. Good to see you. In my case, I was working at CNN. It was, 1987, I think. And a dear friend of mine had just gone off to, he'd roomed with me in my apartment there in Atlanta for a summer. And he was hell-bent on going to law school. And he took his LSATs and he graduated from the University of Michigan. But we had become friends and fraternity brothers at WVU before he transferred. And he went off to law school and began writing letters back telling me what a fantastic intellectual atmosphere it was. And he had gone, in fact, to Ole Miss, University of Mississippi, there at Oxpatch. And he kept saying, oh, Robin, you just got to try it. You got to try it. This place was meant, the law school was meant for you. And I, meanwhile, was a professional journalist and a broadcaster at CNN in the radio division. Face made for radio, you know. Back then it was. And so I said, well, why not? And one payday, I took a chunk of change and went off to sent in my check and my application, all the stuff demonstrating that I, by God, had actually gotten a bachelor's degree from Harvard on the Mon, West Virginia University, and filed to take the LSAT. Now, a lot of people filing to take the LSAT get themselves really, really wrought. But I had a real world job, and so I had real world relationship and real life, and so I didn't spend a lot of time. I certainly didn't study for it. You really can't. I mean, I guess you could, if your mommy and daddy are really wealthy, they could send you off to one of those Gabe Kaplan Academy things where they teach you test taking and stuff. But, I mean, for me, it was kind of a lark. Let's see if we can get in. Me and that mouse in my pocket. And so the day, and I stayed unnervous until the day before the test. I think it was on a Monday. I know they had it. It was being held in a classroom at Georgia State in downtown Atlanta. And the night before, I was kind of antsy. I still didn't attach a whole lot of significance to the moment, but found myself unable to sleep. So I got in the car and I drove over to what we referred to as the Disco Kroger's. There was a Kroger in Atlanta over on Piedmont Road, and it was next to a disco called the Limelight. And it was so bougie all the way back in the late 80s that it had a sushi bar even then. Well, in fact, that was the first place I ever ate sushi. And so I was going to go over, find, I don't know, fry a steak or something. And I happened into the book aisle. And the cover of a paperback just caught my eye. And it had a strange title. It just read Forrest Gump. And for some reason or another, I pulled it off the shelf. And generally speaking, I have a rule that if I open a book and the first paragraph doesn't grab me, I put the book back. Well, the first paragraph, the second paragraph, and several pages into the book grabbed me, because by the time all was said and done, I was standing there leaning on the book rack in the Disco Kroger's with tears falling out of my eyes and bent nearly double laughing. It was the funniest thing I'd read since Mark Twain. And so I figured they probably wouldn't take kindly to me just reading and kind of, you know, bending the cover and ruining it. So I walked up and I checked out and took it back home to my apartment there on the banks of the Chattahoochee River. Had a little balcony overlooked the Chattahoochee National Recreation Area. I could hear the roar of the interstate out on I-75 not far away. Jets periodically flew over, headed into Dobbins Air Force Base. And I proceeded to spend the rest of that night reading that book. And I was absolutely ruined. I laughed all night long. And then as the sun came up, I realized, well, this is an interesting way to prepare and go take the LSAT. This is actually a story about the LSAT. And I went, sat down, and it was all a bunch of analogies. This is to that as that is to the other. And I was done probably 30 minutes before everybody else, because didn't give a fuck. And I forget what the grading scale was, but it was like, I think the highest you could get on the LSAT back then was like a 48. And I don't remember exactly what my score was, but I know it was like in the upper 90th percentile. Kind of good at taking tests. And so, you know, but the day I took it, I thought, well, okay, I probably screwed that up. And got ready. Monday was my day off, so didn't have to show up to work till Wednesday. I was off Mondays and Tuesdays. And didn't give it much thought. I may have had tickets for the Hawks or something, because when you worked at, you know, Ted Turner's sports franchises all sucked, and you, as a CNN employee, could get free tickets just to put a warm butt in a seat once in a while. I don't know. Maybe she and I went to a movie or something. But anyway, didn't give any further thought to it, but eventually I did get my scores. And you list who you want to receive your scores. I think you get to send them to three schools for the price of the admission. And one of them was WVU, because by then I'd begun hankering for the hills. See, what happens when you take a little hillbilly out of the hills is no matter how fabulous it is wherever you are, sooner or later you will start to pining. And I was surely pining. But, you know, the long and the short of it is that I scored very well, and I got into law school, and I got admitted to the University of Alabama, I got admitted to the University of Wyoming, got admitted to West Virginia University, and a couple of others that I just knew I couldn't afford. And, of course, I chose West Virginia. It's one of those little, you know, because life is not a line. Life is like a spider web. And sometimes you can just go off one down one leg of the web, and you turn around and you realize there's no getting back. But I got into law school, and maybe for the first day or so. I mean, I met a girl who had made a 48 on the LSAT. Yeah, that's what 48 was, like the top score. And everybody was like, we're not worthy, you know, because she was a super genius. And she wasn't pretentious at all, and she was like, no, it ain't shit. I remember the torts professor one day called on her, and she said, I haven't done the reading. He said, but you're the such-and-such scholar. You've got the scholarship. The books were paid. She said, just because they buy the books don't mean I got to read them. She quit law school after the first year. I hated it. Smart girl. But I say all that, and, by the way, billable Rick, I knew I'd trigger somebody with an LSAT story. My LSAT preparation, Billable says, I studied for the LSAT for exactly 4 hours in the summer of 1985 with the aid of a certain stimulant. I then took, wonder what that was. I took the LSAT next day. It was the 80s after all. I then took the LSAT next day and did well enough to get into all the law schools to which I applied except for UT at Austin. Since then, the state has always been Tex-ass to me. I know, kind of hold a grudge like that, don't you, Billable? Darlene, do you have you got an LSAT story? And yeah, I said that on purpose, Lee. The Gabe Kaplan Institute for the LSAT. FYI, the founder of the learning company was Stanley Henry Kaplan. Did you learn about law at Polk High with the Sweat Hogs? You're damned right I did, signed Lee, listening too closely in New York City. Ooh, Mr. Cotta. Well, all of that, and that's a hell of a setup, and it's a shaggy dog story, I realize. But all of that is by way of explaining what's coming next. First of all, I knew that there was probably going, I mean, if Zombie Jesus had come back wearing a classic English barrister's coif, and Joe Biden had nominated him to the Supreme Court of the United States, Tucker Carlson would be sitting over there on Fox News TV, Radio Rwanda, screaming, crucify him! Crucify some sense into him! Goddamn liberal! He's not going to be a constitutional originalist! And so what I expected came to... By the way, just as an aside, Pat Leahy's a pretty good senator. He's a Democrat from Vermont, of course. He's been in the Senate since God was a baby. And Annette and I were watching TV on the iPad the other day. I think it was Sunday. It was one of the Sunday shows, maybe, that had Pat Leahy on. I think we were in between action movies or something like that. And I just and Pat Leahy was talking about the eminent qualifications of Judge Ketanji Brown Jackson. When, bless his heart, he referred to Judge Jackson as, and this is pretty near to a quote, and, you know, he's got that kind of grumbly old guy voice. He was a prosecutor.
He did a good job in the impeachment trials. He said, well, pretty sure Judge Janet Jackson will do a good job on the court. I didn't say anything. And all of a sudden, Annette looks at me and goes, did he just call her Janet Jackson? I said, yeah, I think he did. She said, what the? I said, honey, he's old. He's old. But I knew it was from there on, it was going to be off to the races. Oh, in more ways than one. And so we find ourselves at a point where Cucky Tucky Carlson is still extremely butthurt that a black woman has been nominated for a seat on the Supreme Court because, well, Tucky O'Rose is, of course, a white supremacist. There's really no doubt left. And so he's not sure if Ketanji Brown Jackson is qualified. And so we get this.
So it might be time for Joe Biden to let us know what Ketanji Brown Jackson's LSAT score was.
Ketanji? Does she have a sister named Kentucky Tucker? Ketanji I know, I'm sorry, the size. We've talked about the size. I apologize for the size. Let's back this up again and see if I can avoid breaking in on it and just let all the stupid come out of his mouth at once.
So it might be time for Joe Biden to let us know what Ketanji Brown Jackson's LSAT score was.
I can't get through it. What I want to know is, did it actually say Ketanji Brown Jackson on the teleprompter? I know this is a teeny tiny little thing, but it's Thorn in the Side Thursdays, and these are the kind of things that send me straight out the studio door, grabbing fistfuls of dirt, washing it down with a warm glass of pee-pee, running rabbits, all the while with a bunch of onions in my socks. Ketanji Brown Jackson. But you heard the thrust there. He wants to see her long-form LSAT scores.
So it might be time for Joe Biden to let us know what Ketanji Brown Jackson's LSAT score was. What the hell is she doing the LSATs? Why wouldn't he tell us that? That would settle the question conclusively as to whether she's a once-in-a-generation legal talent the next one.
No, it really wouldn't, because, like I said, my dear friend got the highest possible score on the LSAT, and she was one and done at a state school. And make no mistake, to this day, she could make mincemeat, of Tucky O'Rose with half her brain tied behind her back, my friends. Oh, really? One more time. Once more unto the breach, dear friends. Billable Rick asking, Robin, does Senator Leahy still own a certain trailer park in Northeast Canada, or am I confusing my Leahys? I think that might be a different Leahy. That's no Leahy. That's the senator from Vermont. Shame on me. Again.
So it might be time for Joe Biden to let us know what Ketanji Brown Jackson's LSAT score was. What the hell is she doing the LSATs? Why wouldn't he tell us that? That would settle the question conclusively as to whether she's a once-in-a-generation legal talent the next learned hand. It would seem like Americans in a democracy have a right to know that and much more before giving her a lifetime appointment, but we didn't hear that. And that was just one of many things that Joe Biden... So it might be...
Yeah, and we didn't hear that. You know who else's LSAT scores we didn't hear? Ann's boy, Neil. Hell, not only did we not hear about Brett Kavanaugh's LSAT scores, we still can't find out who secretly paid his goddamn mortgage.
Well, we don't even know if Justice Handmaid's husband would let her release her LSAT scores. Stephen, New York, pointing out her LSAT scores. This is the Justice Brown version of, we need to see Obama's birth certificate. God damn, the racism is just sickening. It is. It's positively nauseating. And of course, since it's coming from the festering gob of Tucky O'Rose, it's no surprise, I suppose. Lee in New York says, I wonder how long it will take for someone to say Jackson Brown, the singer, when getting her name wrong. Apologies for this. I expect that the Republican cross-examination will be pause, running on empty. Holy. That's not terrible. Eddie Glaude Jr. Jumped in on the on the tweet of this little soundbite and said, perhaps someone should ask about his transcripts at Trinity College, but actually no one's really claiming that he's a once-in-a-lifetime anything. Oh, I don't know. Dr. Glaude, I think that's unfair. He is a once-in-a-lifetime white supremacist on a... he's not even the only one of them. So you get an idea where this is going. A lot of lawyers seem to get a little bit bent about this. With all due respect, said Joyce Aline, she's a legal correspondent for NBC, and I do mean do. LSAT scores are what law schools use to decide who to admit. It's what you do with that education once you become a member of the bar that determines your fitness to be a federal judge and a SCOTUS justice. This is all they got? Which prompted another lawyer by the name of Jeffrey Adair. Does Tucker has to ask? Why, most lawyers, and I gotta tell you, Miss Terry chimed in and asked me, did I post my LSAT? I said, no. Well, but Tucker has to ask. Most lawyers prominently display their LSAT scores in their offices, usually framed with their diplomas and license. Some even embroider it on their cuffs. Mine was on our letterhead. I said, I had mine tattooed on my never mind. It's not there anymore anyway. Oh, good God, they're down to the... You know what I'd like to see is I'd like to see Tucky O'Rose take the, what is it, the MMPI, the Minnesota Multiphasic Personality Inventory? I bet that might be a blast. Oh, well, thank you, Billable. Cowbell from Billable for That's No Leahy, that's the senator for Vermont. I thought that was pretty quick. Thank you for noticing. It matters. It does. So it's a starting place. And expect now the Judge Jackson long form LSAT score demands to begin being squealed across the fruited plain until it can be heard on Ultima Thule. Because, of course, it's what they do. Brother Deacon Asa notes, somebody ought to tell Rubber Tucky, that's quality. Rubber Tucky, you're the one. Never mind. Too many things rhyme with that. Somebody ought to tell Rubber Tucky, not only do we not know what Justice Beerbong's LSAT score was, we don't even know if he went to law school. It didn't say anywhere on his calendar that he went to law school. Oh, good God, I'd forgotten about the calendar, Asa. Good snag on the short side there. This asshole again. I'm sorry, Megan, I don't mean to torment you, dear. This asshole again. Once again, a mediocre white man who got into school purely on mommy and daddy's recommendations and bank account is questioning the credentials of a black woman I'm willing to bet good money has way more qualifications than Cucky Tucky. Was he worried about Amy Coed Barrett Handmaid's credentials when the Republicans rammed her through the Senate? Or was he busy kissing her ass about how good she'd be on the court? Fuck him. Fuck Republicans. And I can't decide if I need hard liquor or popcorn to watch the Senate proceedings on this one. What? Megan, you don't have to get trapped in some bullshit binary. You can have popcorn and booze. And being as how popcorn is salty and stuff, I'd suggest tequila. But that's me. Thank you, Cecilia, for jumping in on fundraising this evening and meeting Jeffrey Giraffrey Jr. and Joey Two the Kangaroos Challenge. Thank you so much. So we're at 680? 680 to go? That sounds about right. And Asa says, rubber tucky's mine, by the way. Use it in good health, and I will credit you if it sneaks back into the conversation. Stephen New York, meanwhile, says, I want to see Tucker Richard Cranium Carlson's genetic test to show he has 46 chromosomes instead of the 49 that chimps and gorillas have. Well, I mean, I think that's really a shitty thing to say about chimps and gorillas, Steve. How many chromosome pairs does a dung beetle have? Or one of those worms that enters through your feet and it winds up crawling out your nostril after it eats your brains or something? Oh, Jesus. I didn't see that. Lousy news out of Louisville. The jury gave a pass on the charge of reckless endangerment of Breonna Taylor's neighbors to Brett Hankinson. Jesus. Of course, John, remember, he was not charged with killing Breonna Taylor because that was apparently okay. And it is so nauseating to me to even say that out loud. But do you get a sense for what kind of thorn in the side Thursday this is going to be? And what I mentioned earlier, this gave me chills. Oh, Darlene, LSAT story. Yeah, taking the LSAT sucked. I was freaked out as I always believed I could not do well on standardized tests. So the fact that you rolled out of bed and took it with little fanfare or care in the world, I never made it to bed, Darlene, mystifies me and annoys me not a little bit. Sorry. I didn't give a shit. You met a girl? What was she, 12 years old? She must have been brilliant if she took the LSATs at that age and she entered law school. No, she was 3 years younger than me. I was, so I guess she would have been, what, 22, something like that? No, are you talking about my pal in law school? I dropped my brother off at his request as a favor to him by his recently purchased super nice and pristine 1960-something classic car Mustang lime green color. Oh, my God, I remember that color. It was clandestinely parked down the road from our parents' home. He was going to have new mag wheels put on it and surprise my parents. I went off to take the LSATs. Oh, he surprised them all right. Full-fledged accident, totaled the Stang on his way to the auto shop. Police came to visit my parents with him in tow. He was fine, thank goodness. Hadn't occurred to me that he hadn't gotten his driver's license yet. So guess who got in a heap of trouble after she returned home from the LSATs? Well, of course you did. Yeah, that's what I think of every time I think of the LSATs, along with my boyfriend at the time, my first real ex for many years now, who broke the news to me as it was his brother who happened to cross the accident scene. Good God, Darlene, what a hot mess. That's awful. But you got in a, you got into a nice school. So you must have done exceeding well too. I never attached a lot of, I think part of the reason I didn't give a shit about the LSAT was because I already had a job. And I had a job that I pretty much liked. And so it didn't, I was already in the real working world. When I entered law school, I was like 3 years or 4 years older than most of my classmates who were coming straight out of college and into law school because that was just the track that we were on. Was it one of those Mustang, what was it, a Mach 2? Was that the redesign? Because I knew somebody who had one of those in high school. He's long since gone. Police job description. Steve in New York says, if we take the killing black people item on a cop's job description, what's left? Well, in the case of Brett Hankinson, not a lot. He was fired, of course, by the Louisville Police Department, but that's okay. He's got a not guilty on him now, so he can go get a copping job. Oh, maybe across the river in Ohio. Frank in Iowa, how many chromosomes does your stink bug have? Don't know. But you know what? I'm pretty sure that Sally the studio stink bug has a more well-developed moral sense than Rubber Tucky. That's Aces, by the way. Know who also, in New York. Know who also passed the LSATs? Giuliani, Sidney Powell, Lynn Wood. Don't judge law skill by LSAT. Oh, no, it's exactly what Joyce Aline said. It's what you do with it that matters. Oh, and yeah, here we are. It's about the mid-40s outside, and apparently it's time to burn some coal. And the wind is apparently blowing toward me this evening, so pardon me if I start complaining about a thundering headache in about half an hour or so. Oh, my God. I want to say, Darlene says, I want to say that it was a 1965 Mustang. The previous owner had it forever and took care of it like it was gold. It lasted 24 hours with my brother, LOL. I'll bet he still talks about it. Well, I'll bet you still talk. Why did you get in trouble? Oh, wait, because you were part of the conspiracy. Of course. Yeah. I hate it when I run across a news story, and of course, remember, Newsweek has become a right-wing rag. Katie Wermus, W-E-R-M-U-S, with a little snippet of a news article. I don't know why you publish this when you don't have even half of the who, what, when, where, why, how, and how much that constitutes actual, no kidding, first draft of history journalism. A Democratic candidate in South Dakota withdrew his candidacy for a U.S. House seat after receiving backlash from tweets he made from his personal Twitter account before he decided to run for office. I'm reading you the entirety of the article here, because this is a thorn in the side, too. I hate bad journalism. Ryan Ryder was running for the seat held by Republican Representative Dusty Johnson, No, Robin, you will not. You will leave that alone. You will let it bounce harmlessly off of the rim. No, Robin, no. Republican Representative Dusty Johnson, but pulled out of the race. Ryan Ryder did. Dusty Johnson did not pull out. After being scrutinized for tweets that were, quote, a poor attempt at sarcasm and, quote, unquote, humor, which, quote, crossed the line, unquote, he told the Associated Press. This is a developing story and will be updated when more information becomes available. In other words, that's Katie Wormus speak for when I actually get to read the entire Associated Press story. Mean tweets. I don't know if Ryan Ryder was a credible candidate, but he's been run out of the race for mean tweets from his personal Twitter account. Now, on the other hand, if that had been a Republican and there were mean tweets, they would simply squeal cancel culture and send out a few more shitty mean tweets. Dusty Johnson, laughing emojis. Megan says, oh my God, the jokes. Why do you think I let it bounce harmlessly off the rim? Trying to keep this program out of the gutter, at least for the first hour or so. Well, Ryan Ryder, I wonder what you said. The Swedes are pissed. You wonder if it's the beginning of the search for casus belli. Four Russian fighter jets briefly entered Swedish territory over the Baltic Sea on Wednesday, Swedish Defense Minister Peter Hultqvist said. The Russian violation of Swedish airspace is, of course, completely unacceptable. Don't know if they scrambled any jets to take the flying paperweight out of the air. Two Russian Su-27 and two Su-24 jets entered Swedish airspace east of the island of Gotland. The Swedish defense minister saying it will lead to a firm diplomatic response from Sweden. Swedish sovereignty and territory must always be respected. Funny, I recall someone saying that about Ukraine. Getting a little warm, isn't it? Oh, and this being Thorn in the Side Thursday from the really, no. No, Dub, as has previously been said by John Oliver, you need to sit this one out. Because now W is out there talking about his interactions with Vlad Putin. Remember, he said he looked into Putin's soul? Will. During a Q&A for the at a benefit fundraiser for the Illinois Holocaust Museum and Education Center, yesterday, W decided it was story time. He said, he introduced Vladimir Putin to Barney, our Scottish Terrier, and he dissed him. A year later, Laura and I go visit Vladimir and his wife. This was before he decided to be with a gymnast 30 years younger. And he says, I want you to meet my dog. I said, yeah, sure. And I'll never forget, outruns a huge Russian hound. And Putin says, bigger, stronger, and faster than Barney. Well, then I told the Canadian Prime Minister, and he said, at least he only showed you his dog, eh? Yeah, you remember Barney, the terrier that W dropped on his head? That Barney? You remember Barney, the one that licked him when he passed out in the Oval Office and was laying there on the carpet and woke up with Barney licking his face? That Barney. Sit this one out, George.
He dissed my dog. You know, the last time you got pissed off about somebody dissing something, you murdered a million Iraqi innocent civilians. So, yeah, we'll take a powder, thanks.
Oh, as to why Darlene got in trouble? Because, per my father, you know better. You're the responsible one. We don't expect your brother to be responsible.
That's some privilege. That's some privilege, that male privilege.
And yeah, that's what he said, LOL. To my brother's credit, he did try to fall on his sword and begged them not to give me a hard time about it. He said it wasn't my fault. He told them I didn't know and was only helping him at his request. P.S., I was off at university, so I may not have known he hadn't gotten his license yet.
Oops.
I'm still sorry you went through that door.
I saw that story earlier, and it gave me chills. That there is talk now that the sham trials, the show trials, and the executions will probably begin in, what is it, Kherson? That's sickening. Really sickening. Horrifying. And then there's this dude. I don't know if you've seen the video. Oh, wait, dissing the dog. Billable Rick says, it's a good thing G.W. Bush was president and not John Wick when Vladoff Putler made fun of Barney the dog. I'm not that familiar with John Wick, so I may be missing something. Everybody else is probably laughing, though. There's a viral video out there of some pasty-faced, doughy white dude with a thick southern accent who's actually in Ukraine and in the video is standing with a Russian tank column behind him. And he says that the Russians are there to liberate Ukraine, and once again buys into the same thing that we were dealing with a couple of nights ago. You crow Nazis! Well, it turns out dude is a pot farmer. No, really. Remember when Scary Jerry was talking about how perplexed he was to meet a woman who was a witch and a pagan and a maggot all at the same time? Well, Russell Texas Bentley is a weed farmer. And he gave an hour-long interview in which he said that he by God was going to be there with the Russian army for the long haul,
They might take all over all of Europe and the United States for Putin, along with Ukraine. He's been posting on Russian social media. I'm heading west with the liberators of Ukraine. We may stop in Kyiv. We may stop on the English Channel. We may liberate the USA. I don't give a fuck what they think about me in the United States, he said to Rolling Stone. The government or most of the people? He has run for the Senate of the United States back when Paul Wellstone won. He told Rolling Stone he grew up in the Beverly Hills of Dallas. Folks familiar with the Dallas area can, I don't know, is that the same cul-de-sac where W lives? And he talked about his growing up days. He said, I was reading Ho Chi Minh and Che Guevara. I understood the Vietnamese were right to defend their land against foreign invaders and that the United States was wrong. I understood that Fidel and Che were right to overthrow the foreign masters that had turned Cuba into a casino and bordello. I'm anti-racist. I'm anti-imperialist. I grew up supporting people's rights to defend themselves. But you think maybe he, like Barney, was dropped on his head or some such? Because if you're anti-racist and anti-imperialist, Russia's a hell of a place to be that. And, I don't know. Maybe Pepe Escobar can write about him. Because he said of accounts of the rape of Ukraine in the West, he said, everything they say is a lie. It's 180 degrees, opposite direction from what's true. Believe me, bro, this is very clear cut. This is a battle, not just a Ukraine. This is a battle between good and evil for the future of the world. Right now, it's looking like the world might just now have a chance because us and our friends are kicking some Nazi ass right now. I wish I was kidding.
Stand up. Suggest Robota. It's chaos on the front line with the denazifiers and liberators of Ukraine. These guys are tough, these guys are ready, and there's plenty of them. So far, Russia has used about 10% of its military power, and we're getting ready to bring the hammer down. These guys are going to save and liberate all the good people in Ukraine, and the bad people, boom, kick their ass.
Do we file this under giving aid and comfort to the enemy? Now, I'm so old, I can recall the fact that there are still people out there mad at Hanoi Jane Fonda. Wonder if they can work up the same amount of outrage for pot farmer Texas Bentley, former Minnesota Senate candidate. Of course, Russia's got a lot more than 10%. They got more like 80% of their whole freaking army poised in and around Ukraine. And I got to admit, it's been kind of a long day. Because some experts are better than other experts. But when I hear people talking about negotiated solutions, there's just something that makes me think that maybe they think they're dealing with somebody that they're not dealing with. Putin is not going to turn around and pull the troops back. And those hard men that Texas Bentley there is talking about. Those hard men are conscripts, some of whom were sent to Ukraine or to Belarus with round-trip tickets and told they were participating in joint military exercises and then found out that they were going to actually go and hear shots fired in anger in Ukraine.
Saw one estimate that says that there are over 5,000 Russian troops dead so far. And you got to wonder what the Russian mamas are going to think when their Russian babies don't come home. Or come home as the honored dead. But it's a very different story inside Russia versus the information that we have. It's all glorious, glorious campaign to protect Mother Russia. Yeah, is this? Do you get mad at this dipshit? I mean, you can hear at the beginning of the video, some guy in Russian telling him to stand up. Let's try this again.
These guys are tough. These guys are ready. Stand up. Suggest Robota. It's chaos on the front line with the denazifiers and liberators of Ukraine.
Stand up. I mean, you can't be shooting propaganda videos with a doughy, pasty-faced American pot farmer just kind of sitting there in the mud of the road. It's not quite the image Mother Russia wants. No, he was not purple. Billable Rick asked, wasn't Barney the dog purple? Perhaps because GW dropped him on his head. No, that's the dinosaur. Damn it, Rick. Stay with the program. Okay. Thank you, Megan. I'm a little culturally unaware sometimes. John Wick is played by Keanu Reeves, who is an assassin who kicked off a killing spree because someone went after his dog. And you took the words right out of my mouth, Megan continues. Yeah, he's anti-imperialist and anti-invader, but he's pro-Putin and pro-Russian trying to liberate Ukraine. Ugh, I can't. I do think chamomile tea is going to do it. I think I need an actual pot of the stuff for this. I understand. The only thing I can explain is that while cannabis can be good for some people, well, it is possible to smoke too much for too long. And then maybe you're able to be pro-Putin and pro-Russian, but anti-invader and anti-imperialist, and you think that Ukraine's being liberated. I guess he was living on an inheritance or something. I don't know. Russell, Texas, Bentley. Oh, wow. An example, Megan says, of the steely resolve of the Ukrainian people. Oleksandra Mativichuk tweeting, woman from Konotop speaks to a Russian soldier. You do not know our city. Here, every second woman is a witch. You won't be able to get a hard on tomorrow. I gotta hear this. You okay? Wow. Busy night. But the funny thing is, if this war is teaching us anything here at home, it is the extent to which Russia had the success that it had in its disinformation campaign. Going back even before Nitwit Nero took office. And it's out in the daylight now. Yeah, hear, hear. Bernadette says, that Texas denazifier, can somebody give that motherfucker some sunflower seeds, please? Yeah, put them in, put a bunch of them in your pocket. The head of the FSB, the successor to the KGB in Russia, Sergei Naryshkin, he's crying on social media, quoted by Paul Son over at the Washington Post, saying, "The masks are off. The West simply isn't trying to close off Russia behind new Iron Curtain. This is about attempt to ruin our government, to cancel it, as they now say, intolerant liberal fascist circles." Oh, really? The Russian spy chief is whining about cancel culture, cancel culture. You ever wonder why they wind up saying the same things? You ever wonder why states like Alabama and Texas have more in common with Vladimir Putin's Russia than they do with the rest of the country? Is that an accident? Is that just a coincidence?
Trying to close off Russia behind new Iron Curtain.
Well, since we're talking about my youth, I can mention the fact that I started college where that phrase was first uttered. A lecture series at Westminster College in 1948 when Harry Truman invited his old pal Winnie Churchill to come and give a lecture at a tiny little liberal arts college, that at the time a men's liberal arts college, in the middle of Missouri, not far from Columbia. And on that night, Winnie declared to a bunch of fresh-faced American white boys,
"An iron curtain has descended across the face of Eastern Europe,"
and caused a massive international incident in the process. The British Foreign Office was horrified. But the phrase caught on. And the lockdown that was taking place in the states the former nations that had been essentially appropriated by the Soviet Union were referred to thenceforward as being behind the Iron Curtain. So there is no new Iron Curtain. What's your name again, Spooky? Sergei Naryshkin. But he's in on the kleptocracy along with Putin. You know, Putin came to power in the wake of the breakup of the Soviet Union. While he was still a Lieutenant Colonel Spook in then East Germany. I think he was posted in Dresden. And coming back to, and using his spook skills, coming back to Russia, he and some of his cronies began engaging they opened up a little launderette. Only what they were laundering was stolen money. And that's been the game all along. But the fact of the matter is, what I said is true. Places like Alabama, Iowa, Texas, have as much or more in common with Vladimir Putin's Russia in terms of bigotry, discrimination, Well, they have more in common with Russia than they do with decent states in this union. And again, it did not happen by accident. And the Republican Party sucked up to Vladimir Putin, and particularly Vladimir Putin's money. Well, like a moth drawn to a light bulb. And they haven't been burned. I am proud of the Biden administration. You know, I told you that tears came to my eyes when I heard what Biden said about the trans community in the State of the Union. Well, yesterday they followed up and put meat on the bones of those words. The Department of Health and Human Services stands with transgender and gender nonconforming youth and their families, and the significant majority of expert medical associations in unequivocally stating that gender-affirming care for minors, when medically appropriate and necessary, improves their physical and mental health. Attempts to restrict, challenge, or falsely characterize this potentially life-saving care as abuse is dangerous. Such attempts block parents from making critical health care decisions for their children, create a chilling effect on health care providers who are necessary to provide care for these youth, and ultimately negatively impact the health and well-being of transgender and gender nonconforming youth. The HHS Office of Civil Rights will continue working to ensure that transgender and gender nonconforming youth are able to access health care from the burden of discrimination. Free from the burden of discrimination. HHS understands that many families and healthcare providers are facing fear and concerns about attempts to portray gender-affirming care as abuse. To help these families and providers navigate those concerns, HHS is providing additional information on federal civil rights protections and federal health privacy laws that apply to gender-affirming care. As a law enforcement agency, that's key. Office of Civil Rights is investigating and, where appropriate, enforcing Section 1557 of the Affordable Care Act cases involving discrimination on the basis of sexual orientation and gender identity in accordance with all applicable law. This means that if people believe they have been discriminated against in a health program or activity that receives financial assistance from HHS, they can file a complaint. Parents or, and this is bolded, parents or caregivers who believe their child has been denied health care, including gender-affirming care, on the basis of that child's gender identity may file a complaint with OCR. Health care providers who believe that they are or have been unlawfully restricted from providing health care to a patient on the basis of that patient's gender identity may file a complaint with OCR. OCR enforces federal civil rights laws that it prohibit discriminatory restrictions on access to health care. Among these laws is Section 1557, which prohibits discrimination on the basis of race, color, national origin, sex, age, and disability in covered health programs or activities of OCR. That's essentially the Biden administration telling terrorized parents of trans kids in Texas and soon Alabama that they are welcome to file a complaint and that the OCR will happily sue the living bejesus out of states like Texas and Alabama. And I should probably mention, because, you know, anytime we talk about the Biden administration, we have to take into account that the fact that they are absolutely insufficiently ideologically pure. But I might point out that no other administration has ever done that. Ever. And that, in fact, the previous occupant, TFG, the former guy, actively worked to take health care away from trans people. And that business about if they take HHR money, they're on the hook. One hopes. I mean, the state of Texas takes HHR money. that means that they are suable. SECD, Texas, SECD! Yeah. That's substantial, and it's very real. And it's inspiring. And I could not be more proud. And so let's kind of stay on that topic for a moment. Talk about being inspired. There was a story a couple of weeks back about a young man, young cis man, young straight cis man, at the University of North Texas in Denton, Texas. And he was at the copier in the library and noticed that there were some of his fellow students, a couple of young women, were copying flyers. Anti-trans flyers, and I think I even played the audio here on the program. And they and of course because the little snowflake snowflake wingnut transphobes were so they tried to smear the kid as having melted down on them. When the video provided made it pretty clear that he just said, you know, you should be ashamed of yourselves. What you're doing is wrong. Well, that was a couple of weeks ago. And in the meantime, it hasn't calmed down, and the energy against these anti-trans kids and the energy against the anti-trans movement in Texas, there at North Texas University in Denton, has only gotten stronger. So what happened is there's a dude bro named Jeff Younger. He is, of course, white and middle-aged male with his little chin beard. And on his Twitter bio, he says he is a loving father, Army veteran, and successful small business owner, a proven leader and conservative champion. And he's got 179 people following and 67 followers. But here's the backstory. Jeff Younger, notice he says he's a loving father. I think we could debate that. Because he has a daughter. His daughter is trans. He thought he had a son, but she's trans and she's transitioning. And he tortured and tormented her so much that her mama sought and received sole custody of their daughter so that she could take appropriate care of her. Well, this then, of course, caused conservative hero Jeff Younger to get all butt hurt and get all men's rightsy. And he—I'm not sure. He may even—he may even have problems, some child support problems.
I ain't going to pay no child support for no tranny kid of mine.
I apologize for using that word. But he done come to campaign there at North Texas University. And it didn't go too well because students found out. And they filled up the room where Jeff Denton, horrible parent and transphobic dad, was going to speak. And this was what happened. The anti-transphobes, these young scholars, filled that lecture hall, pounding on the tables and chanting, as you heard, fuck these fascists. Fuck these fascists. And then, of course, the police came in and cleared the room, and the kids left. And went outside and continued their chants and continued their protest. There are so many things, there are problems in Texas. Just like the state where I was born, Alabama. Just like the state where I live and have lived for more than, well, for the majority of my life. But what you heard there, those kids are the future. Jeff Younger went on to declare that there is no such thing as transgender. Really? I got a surprise for you. And barked and grunted and hooted about our cheering. But the most important takeaway for me out of this video is the fact that those are Texas kids. Those are Texas kids in a state university. And they don't want anything to do with that ugliness. Oddly enough, the place where I first saw the video has been it's been taken down. But obviously the video does still exist. Matt in San Francisco with a note, Jeff Younger. Most small business owners don't have to say they are successful. Just saying. That's true. This program being a case in point. Ever since the day that Dan Fisher so anointed it, we pointed out this program is adequate. For nearly 20 years, adequate. But if that's any indication, part of the reason that the wing nuts in Texas are losing their shit is because they have had a little glimpse of the future. And that's a future that may very well not include them. Younger? Asks Arthur. What's wrong with the elder fella? Well, I saw Younger and I thought of, wasn't he a pal of the James boys, Jesse and Frank? Cole Younger? Dude's probably kin. Stuff like that probably strikes fear into the hearts of the fascists. And the young conservatives of University of North Texas organized the event. And the University of North Texas, in turn,
issued a statement. Dear UNT students, UNT is our home, and everyone should feel accepted and safe in their home. We are a deeply diverse community of people from a variety of cultural, political, ethnic, racial, and religious backgrounds with a vast spectrum of life experiences and perspectives. Our campus community is inclusive and has long embraced and been proud of that very diversity.
I know the last several days may have felt particularly difficult for the transgender members of our community due to the intolerant views of a handful of campus members. We have a variety of resources through our Division of Inclusion, Diversity, Equity, and Access to support you during your time at UNT, and we hope to offer you a safe place to heal and grow your support system. Regardless, and this comes from Neil Smatresk, the president of UNT, regardless of who we are or where we come from, we will encounter people who disagree with us or do not accept us. Here on our campus, we honor our First Amendment rights, even when we don't agree with others' opinions. Our views, our very existence, might be challenged in ways that feel incredibly hurtful. Especially in those moments, I want you to know that you are a valued member of our mean green family. We value diversity of thought because it helps shape us all, whether it's exposing us to new ideas or reaffirming who we want to be in the world. I encourage you to engage in open discourse, free expression, and debate. And don't be put off if the transphobes try to kill you or stab you or beat you or stomp you. All individuals have the right to peacefully assemble, I added that part, to speak and to engage in expressive activity, including that which you may find offensive. Each of you has the freedom to express yourself and the freedom to walk away, disempowering those with intolerant views. Speak up for and take care of one another, and above all, walk through this life with care, kindness, and grace. Respectfully, Neil Smatresk, UNT President. Just smile at him and tell him God bless you when they tell you that you don't have a right to exist in the world. Yes, Ralphs, those are in fact weasel words. And meanwhile, one of the cops hit one of the protesters with their cop car. A cop car hit a protester when myself and some other protesters calmly asked the many cops that were standing around if any medical assistance was coming. They didn't answer us. And one student was injured when the cop ran him down. Meanwhile, the guy who became famous claiming that he had had a concrete milkshake thrown at him in Portland. So the far-left crowd advocating for transitioning children at UNT News became increasingly angry as the night went on in Denton, Texas. Precisely, Matt in San Francisco. I'm sure Matthew Shepard would have liked to walk away. Yeah, walking away beats the hell out of getting crucified on a barbed wire fence, doesn't it? But there's a future there. That was actually bravery. And it was inspiring. So, a little bit of good news-ish.
on A Thorn in the Side Thursday? We're halfway through the program, and I have huge thanks to send out to Yuki. Thank you, Yuki. Thank you so much. Yuki did a have a show on me. So we are now down to only $480 to go to get caught up with the month of March. That actually meets Bruce's Memorial Challenge. Thank you so much. Thank you so much, Yuki. So you want to engage in, I mean, has this been, is the Thursday thorny enough yet? If you want to talk about any of this or something else, feel free to pick up the phone. I mean, probably just grab it out of your purse or your pocket or what. Language sort of falls apart in the face of modern technology. But anyway, grab your phone. The stress line. Oh, wait a minute. Let's do it this way. Let's go over to the Skype line. I think that's Steve. Is that you, Steve? Oh, wrong button.
I have to turn this off.
Oh, you're fine. I got you.
Did you see that map I sent you? That very curious map.
It is a curious map.
He's provoking NATO.
Oh, yes. He's trying very hard.
This whole thing, I don't even know how to.
Of course, I don't know enough about flying. I mean, when you consider it's a military, you know, some sort of military aircraft, or we're talking about geolocating, GPSs. I mean, does it turn the screen red and say Swedish airspace?
Well, no, the Swedish, I think, knew that. You know, I suspect that's a very strategically located island for them. Because it's in that whatever that body of water. My geography is either very good or completely horrible. And in that part of the world, it's completely horrible.
That's the Baltic.
Yeah, that's so all right, which makes sense. Estonia, Latvia, Lithuania. So it would make sense to me that there's probably some sort of radar station on that island. But what really, whenever I see this stuff, it always makes that little voice inside of me. And I just remember what you said, casus belli. And when I looked at it, I'm like, well, looky there. The only way he could have gotten there without flying over some NATO country's airspace, unless he flew over, I think, Finland, and Finland is not a member of NATO, but that was further north, was to fly through.
But Finland would have thrown a fit, too, because Finland has said, you know, we side with Ukraine. So just looking at the map, I'm guessing from the lay of the land, what that pilot did was fly out of an airbase somewhere near Petrograd and fly out over the Gulf of Finland, stay over the water, and you circled the wrong island.
No, they said it was that
Gotland.
Yeah, that's the one I circled.
No, you didn't.
Really?
Really.
I'll tell you what. Wouldn't be happening if Nixon were president. So I know. A friend of mine used to say that all the time, and I say that to people. Well, it wouldn't be happening if Nixon were president.
I love that. Wouldn't happen if Nixon was president.
Are you sure?
Yes, I'm looking at it right now. I've got it blown up. There's Gotland. And the word next to it is Ventspils in Latvia, and you've got Oyavo Island circled.
I have to find the dam. It's not that I don't believe you. I just want to know what I'm looking at, because this is just. I have such a bad. I talked to a friend of mine. I said, "I think we're going to end up in World War III." Oh well, no. If he was going to attack NATO, he would have done that already. I'm like, I don't. What?
No. The whole goal is to claim NATO started it.
Yeah. Which is, that's clearly what he's doing here. I mean, why else do something like that? it's Gotland, right?
Yeah.
So it's actually even a worse case. I couldn't see it because it was so small.
Yeah, it's further out in the Gulf of Finland.
Yeah, and it's further. If I'm looking at it right. The bottom line is, this was completely. And you know, note that island is. Looks like it's the closest island of any size off the coast of Stockholm.
Well, it's south southeast of Stockholm.
Yeah. Okay, now I see it. By the way, you do understand Richard Cranium, right?
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Okay. I don't know how you get a. I don't know how we get. I don't know how we stay out of a world war.
Well, let's back up for a minute.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody wants to call it World War III, but it takes a whole lot more of the planet than just Europe. Now, if China comes in on Russia's side, then you got a world war.
Yeah, then we got a world war. I mean, I could see Japan coming. I don't know what stance Japan has taken on Ukraine.
Well, the G20 acted with some the G7 and the G20 acted in terms of the sanctions, and Japan is part of that.
Okay. So they acted pretty much with unanimity.
Yeah, I mean this is more unity than world governments have displayed in a very long time.
Yeah, well, you know, on the other hand, though, if Trump had been in there, there'd be all this unity. Plus, it never would have happened. Did you just throw up in your mouth?
Yeah, kind of.
I don't know how NATO stays out of this. I don't see that scenario. I mean, how do?
Well, look. I mean, there are options. Okay, so I was doing some reading earlier. There are actually NATO countries. You might recall last night, if you were still listening, if I hadn't put everybody to sleep. I made reference to the U.S. Lend-Lease program with Great Britain. Well, it turns out that there are NATO countries that fly MiGs.
Well,
and Ukrainian pilots are already checked out on those MiGs.
Interesting.
So it becomes a matter of you know, painting the Ukrainian flag on them and getting them into Ukrainian airspace with an. And then see if Putin wants to take a pot shot at them. The other thing is, there are Ukrainian pilots who have trained in the United States on that big old lumbering hulk of a jet called the A-10 Warthog. That thing is just. It's a beast of an aircraft.
I read somewhere, somebody put it this way. It's like it was basically a huge gun with an airplane built around it.
Yeah, it's a flying tank.
Yeah.
And we are in the process of mothballing some of ours. And again, Ukrainian pilots already know how to fly them.
Mr. Zelensky, we have a Christmas gift for you, early gift.
I forget, was Timon or Pumbaa the warthog?
I don't know.
In The Lion King?
Oh, I never read yeah. The Lion King.
So, yeah. Mr. Zelensky, may I introduce you to Pumbaa?
Yeah, because those things.
And the efficacy of those is that they will lay waste to an entire tank column.
I was just going to say armored, just anything armored. It's, as I recall, they're specifically designed to pierce armor.
No, I mean, they have good God, they have humongous cannons on them.
Yeah. I just saw something that they have they have a 30 millimeter bullet or shell or
whatever. I think it's a 40.
Is it 40? It's like a freaking little rocket is really what it is.
And tanks don't hold up well under, and this is a little bit gross because I'm getting sucked into the war. But the fact of the matter is, if they're going to be given a fighting chance, they have to be given a fighting chance. Once again, another movie reference, Lawrence of Arabia. Troublesome movie. Problematic. But, you know, the Hashemite king saying, we do not need rifles, we need artillery. And the fact of the matter is, I mean, because no matter how loudly they cry for and righteously so, for a no-fly zone, the best thing it seems like the simplest thing would be to let the Ukrainian government enforce its own no-fly zone by creating a Ukrainian air force of people who already know how to operate the equipment in question. Estonia, Latvia, Lithuania probably already have, those are probably maybe Poland are the countries that have the MiGs.
Yeah, it's probably the old Warsaw Pact countries.
Yeah.
Czechoslovakia, Hungary.
And apparently some of those countries are willing to send them, if what I heard from a former State Department employee is to be believed.
Mm-hmm. That would make sense. I don't know if I told you the story. I don't know where I heard this. I was in a restaurant. It was a waiter or it was a bartender. Someone told me that his brother or brother-in-law got called up and told to be prepared to leave on 3 hours' notice at his unit. I think it was in Vermont. I would not be surprised if we have special forces on the ground there. What they're doing, I don't know. But clearly, unlike Trump, Biden can keep a secret, and he's not going to tell the Russians. By the way, did you see the video of the woman? Her name, I think it was Yelena Osipova or something like that. She's an artist who was an artist in, I don't remember where it was. It may have been in Moscow, where she was demonstrating, and she's a painter, and she was a survivor of the Leningrad siege, and she was in a demonstration with some people, and again, I think it was Moscow. And it's just pathetic to watch these police, these 10, 12 police, come up and arrest this old woman who can barely stand while she's holding two paintings of hers against war. And I thought it just, you know, and there's people around taking phone pictures, and the cops and their police or whatever they are aren't doing anything to them. They're taking her away. And you look at this and you look at it and it seemed to me, it's like, this is a microcosm. This is I'll say microcosm. I don't know a better term of Putin and his grip on that country that they pick on the people who can't fight back. See if you can get a hold of that. It's pretty remarkable to see her standing there, and she doesn't move. She just stands there, and
Well, and so Zelensky continues to impress. I just found out by our pal Joy in Ann Arbor that in 2006 he won the Ukrainian version of Dancing with the Stars, and
yeah.
Dude's got some moves.
That's exactly what I heard somebody say. They said, "Wow, he can really, what was it? Cut a rug? Is that the
old?" Yeah, that's the old phrase. Yeah.
the old-timey phrase that you and I used to use.
Yeah, man, back when we wore an onion on our belt, which was a fashion at the time.
So, yeah. But, so, you know, how are you doing?
I'm okay. It's weird. I'm at the top of my shot curve. So, long about Thursday and Friday, I'm in really good spirits because it's basically an upside down, or I don't know, it's a parabola. It's a parabolic curve, starts on Tuesday and then starts back down long about Saturday. I've got an appointment on Saturday for another little milestone. No sense in going into it. My mood has perked up immensely just seeing blue skies and being able to walk outside and not see my breath. Now, that's not a guarantee. March came in like a lamb. That means it'll go out like a goddamn monster, never mind a lion.
Yeah.
But I'm enjoying the warm weather. Having a lot of problems with my neck right now, and it's sending real pain into my shoulders.
Oh, and that's the worst.
And it makes it hard to get comfortable at night. Annette is over. You can't say babysitting anymore. They're not babies, but she's watching the teenagers. While one of them goes to a choral competition.
Mm-hmm. Cool.
I think that's really cool. And so, you know, we're staying in touch by text and phone calls and stuff, and I miss her like crazy. I like to kid myself and think she misses me, but I'm sure I miss her more. We came very close this evening to having a guest kitty in the studio. Miss Lucy Per Morning Paul decided to perch on top of the fab machine, just out of my reach and my sore shoulder. I was like, "Oh, come on, honey."
Wow, wow, wow.
Yep, I get it. I completely get it.
And I finally shook the kibble bag, and I feel terrible when I do that because she's like, "Wait," and took off. So. We were saved from a chorus of
meow.
Period, and Kyle is in the next room, so he's not sitting here.
Meow, meow, mm-hmm. Let me out.
It's like he's like a little gray furry Edward G. Robinson.
Let me out.
And of course, you know, I know it was kind of a long winded story, but it just It just seems when I saw the business with Tuckio Rose, well, where's her goddamned LSATs? Like, and you know, it's not like it's particularly horrifying or anything, but triggering is a thing, because I saw that and it was like, I don't know, some sort of CGI special effect in my head where everything just filled in around that moment. And the next thing you know, I can see me looking down at Forrest Gump, and I can see the words, and then he pulled out the cooking pot variation on the grass hut ploy and stopped that shit cold. Because there's, you know, Forrest Gump is a tiny little book. It was just a little pulp paperback when I got it. Mm-hmm. But there are more laughs per page, like I said, than anything since I read Mark Twain. I mean, it's on a par with the McWilliamses and the burglar alarm, or the McWilliamses and the membranous croup, or cannibalism in the cars, or editing it, how I edited an agricultural paper, or journalism in Tennessee, any of which can make me, you know, pee, and you know, back before transition, even. It's just that funny. You can't stop. And the next, it's pee. And the book, I hate the movie Forrest Gump so much, because they basically took the name of the character and made a movie out of it, and the vast majority of the book never made it in, like the fact that Forrest Gump gets
somehow winds up being an astronaut because he can't pass freshman comp, but he's got an A-plus in graduate-level physics advanced light. That was the name of the class, Advanced Light.
Advanced Light.
At the University of Alabama. And he winds up being an astronaut, and he's sent into space with an orangutan named Sue and a bad-tempered female astronaut. And something goes wrong, and they wind up on a Polynesian island. Maybe this is why it didn't make it into the movie, because there were just too many damn stereotypes. But he winds up being rescued by a cannibal cargo cult. Now, you know what the cargo cults were.
Uh-uh.
Well, in World War II, in the fight against the Japanese, Allied forces would drop war-making supplies onto these remote South Pacific islands to people who were largely unfamiliar with modernity. You know, there's still one of those islands in the Indian Ocean, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And we bust our asses to keep. And then, you know, we had the story a few years ago where the stupid missionary had a box full of Bibles he wanted to take him, and they turned him into a pincushion. And world authorities were like, we told you to leave them alone, because if you show up with so much as a sniffle, you can kill them all.
Sure.
Well, anyway, the cargo cults developed when these people to whom war-making materials had been dropped from, you know, by parachute, began to sort of reinterpret Western culture and even incorporate the things that fell from the sky into their animistic faith system. And so Forrest Gump winds up on an island of cannibalistic cargo cult members.
Mm-hmm.
And he has to play chess for his life with the head man of the tribe. And he learns chess from the head man of the tribe, and so it's, you know, none of the standard chess move names apply. And instead, you get the cooking pot get variation on the grass hut ploy, or the coconut gambit. And this is what I was reading that night, and just couldn't stop laughing. And I mean, there's the scene where he swims out into the river in China and saves Mao's life, and he you know, the scene that's in the movie where he does meet, you know, he meets JFK, he meets LBJ.
Didn't he meet Nixon?
And he meets Nixon. Well, he meets Nixon, but there's a passage in there, and every time he tells Nixon, well, last time I was in here, that fella was here, here the last time, me and him watched the Beverly Hillbillies, talking about LBJ.
Uh-huh.
And Nixon said, and this is just beautiful, Nixon says, well, the Beverly Hillbillies aren't on. The only thing that's on is to tell the truth. And you don't want to watch that. It's a bunch of shit.
Oh, I got to read this book.
It's devastating.
It's a bunch of shit.
To tell the truth, but you don't want to watch that. It's a bunch of shit.
That's perfect.
It's so much funnier a book than, because the movie's kind of sappy. And
yeah,
the whole Run Forest Run, the extended Nike commercial, for God's sakes.
Yeah, no kidding.
And you know, his military involvement. Mm-hmm. Holy mackerel. His boot camp experience. Gump, boiler, stew. Gump, boiler, stew. No spoilers, because you'll understand why I'm sitting getting ready to cry. Because just thinking about it is ruinous. And so I read that all night long and was exhausted just from laughter. And I think that might have been why I did as well as I did, because everything was clear to my mind.
Oh, you mean for the LSAT?
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't... I don't even remember what I did. I must not have done that great.
Did good enough to get in.
Well, I got in because I'm related to one of the founders of the school.
Takes a big man to admit that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, I went to like one of these, you know, one of these, what do you call it? You go to like these things where all the schools are there. Yeah, they're all there. You know, they have their little table set up and everyone is telling you why they're better than everybody else. Or
Recruiting?
Yeah, recruiting. And I went there and I said to the guy, oh, yeah, and I'm related to the guy who was one of the first presidents of the school or something like that. I don't remember what he was. And the guy I was there with, or the guy who I met with, wrote – how did he write it? He wrote it like on a note. Descendant of, and he put the guy's name who was the past president or whatever the hell he was. And I think that was, you know, I could have completely bombed the LSAT and I probably would have gotten in anyway. I knew a guy who apparently there was a time when you could just walk in off the street and take it. You didn't have to register or whatever. And he walked in and just, I think he said he got a 172, just walked in off the street. Which under the new system, I think that's pretty good. The old one, I don't even know what it was. But in any event, there's also one something I wanted to talk to you about. I don't remember what the hell it was. Shit.
Well, we'll keep talking and it'll come back around to you. Billable Rick says sent this along. The other night I heard a CNN interview with a former U.S. general who's retired to Key West. Nice. That general said that one possibility for the U.S. and NATO to buttress the Ukrainian defenses would be to insert non-uniformed troops into the country. The general claimed that the U.S. did this before it formally entered the so-called Great War. In such a scenario, the U.S. and NATO troops would be fighting under their own country's flags. Would not be, but rather as irregulars.
That would be very problematic, because if they got captured, the Geneva Convention would not apply to them.
Right. Do anything you want. It's a regular joint. Rick points out the very same thing. Such troops wouldn't be afforded in any of the Geneva Convention protections of captured troops, not that Pooty abides by international law anyway. Mm-hmm. And they could be executed on the spot. That approach seems very dangerous to me and could lead to an all-out war in Europe, if not all over the world. Your thoughts? I think we're either involved or we're not involved. This is, of course, without regard to, say, you know, the company, the folks out of Langley.
Right.
And we've got some kind of presence. I mean, because we tend to think about foreign intelligence in terms of spies and spooks and signals interception and all of that stuff. But the fact of the matter is, if you think back to when we were desperately in need of a casus belli in Afghanistan, lo and behold, some CIA agent wound up all dead, and then we got all indignant.
Mm-hmm.
When in fact he was just killed, you know, in a goddamn firefight. And so we, you know, we do have CIA who are trained, highly trained, behind enemy lines, war capable. And to think that we're not there is probably silly.
Yeah. I mean, if nothing else, but to just have eyes on the ground to see what's going on.
Yeah.
I
mean, I find it odd that we are getting as much out of there as we are.
You know what? It's funny because I thought the same thing, because when I see all this fairly detailed info, what went through my mind was, how do we know this? Now, it could, you know, a very good indication of what you're saying could be, you know, if you remember how good the – I mean, U.S. intelligence was right on the money when it said for everything that it said about this before it happened. And I'm frankly not used to U.S. intelligence being that good, but it was right on the money. And apparently MI5 was basically saying the same things. That's probably part of that, is they have people on the ground. The thing that I find the most interesting is this, you know, 40 whatever it is, this multiple mile long column that's supposed to be heading to Kyiv, and it's still heading to Kyiv. And I keep thinking, well, why is it still heading to Kyiv? Why is it not there? And that's where the whole stuff with, you know, the gas, they don't have gas. They don't have, I've read stuff that they don't have food and they're raiding grocery stores in order to get food. I think that, I think some of these clips we've seen of Putin bear it out, is this is not going as well as they thought, not even close.
No. I mean, everybody seems to be at consensus on that. This is not at all what he had in mind. He thought he was going to do his own little blitzkrieg.
Oh yeah, and it was going to be over.
But he does not have the military competence for that, because they're really, I mean, we've had this debate in the United States for a lot of years. There is something to be said for a professional military. And when you've got 19-year-old conscripts, I mean, there's unverified video out there, saw it earlier today, of some Ukrainians having captured a Russian soldier and making him call his mommy.
I saw that. They basically fed him and allowed him to call his mom. I did see that. The whole thing just make. I want to say I'm speech. It's not that I'm speechless. This is, I don't know what to think, because it's almost like watching a game of Risk in action. It doesn't quite seem real, and you know that's because we're not there. But it doesn't. It just seems. You know, I remarked to a friend about, you know, in 1939, were they looking at this and thinking what we're thinking now? Let's realize something. They didn't know near as much as we know, because there wasn't Twitter and social media and all this mishigas. There wasn't TV there and et cetera, on the ground to show things as it's happening. There weren't satellite photos, and I don't know if you've seen any of the YouTube, looked at any of the YouTube channels that are YouTube channels of showing live cameras of Kyiv and some of the other cities.
And the fact of the matter is that may be part of it, Steve. There's so much market saturation of internet internet based video transmissions, that it's almost impossible to stop it all.
Right. Yeah. And right now there's such this strong desire to know what's going on, that, you know, people are seeking it out. But yeah, I can't remember what I wanted to talk to you about.
Oh, I did find the story. I finally found the story that kind of gave me the horrors earlier. A European intel official said that Moscow is going to crack down on the protests, and that they may very well engage in public executions as a means of terrorizing the Ukrainian public as they take over cities. Now that European intel official is of course unnamed. So,
yeah, Was it? I want. Yeah.
And I don't know. Do you remember? Do you remember the shit hemorrhage that the right wing had about the guy who walked away from what, the war in Afghanistan? Remember him?
What was his name? I do remember.
And the right wingers were, you know, calling for his head to be lopped off or, you know, whatever. Well, I'm really curious to see how they'll respond to 61-year-old Texas Bentley.
Is that the guy you played earlier?
Yeah.
You know what? I said this to a friend. This is right along those lines. I said this to a friend of mine the other night. I don't like Reagan. Don't like the Bushes. Any of them. But even them, even they would look askance at the shit that Trump did, is doing. Even they would look askance at this Texas yahoo doing this stuff. I'm not, you know, again, it just makes me speechless, but I can't process this. I can't process people like that filming themselves supporting an adversary and taking the adversary's side. I can't. And not only that, but claiming to be, you know, the real patriots or the real Americans and all that. I can't get my head around that.
No, I know. Well, this guy has been, according to the Rolling Stone story, he's been in eastern Ukraine since 2014. He's been granted citizenship in the so-called Donetsk People's Republic. He also has dual Russian citizenship. And says he's an information warrior. Wonder how he's getting dope to smoke.
Wait, he has Russian citizenship.
Yeah.
That's interesting. How come
Russell Bonner Bentley III, born 1960, Highland Park area of Dallas. And he was a hard lefty in his teenage years. Rolling Stone says, dropped out of middle school, went back and got his GED, did a tour in the Army, waited tables and partied for years on South Padre Island on the Texas coast, played guitar in something called the Asbestos Band, liked to play cowpunk, a mix of Johnny Cash and Johnny Rotten. Hell, I bet John Brittavo's probably run across this dude.
Yeah, I was just going to say, that I'm like, I don't know. I just don't know. I don't have any idea. But I did remember what I wanted to talk to you about. Then, unfortunately, I got to get running because my dad just sent me a text message. I got to call him. I want to talk about the stuff in Texas.
Yeah, please.
You know, this is something I can't get my head around. I mean, how many times have we been told that the government has no right to tell parents what to do with their cheerins?
Well, the Republicans throw a damn purple polka-dotted blue screaming hissy if one of us, you know, sissy panty-waist liberals stands up and says, you know what, it's really not a good idea to beat your children. God damn it, I got my daddy took a strap to me and I turned out just fine. Look at me.
Spare the rod?
Spare the rod and spoil a child.
I don't... Here, and you know, there's a on a
well, see, that's what it is. Goddamn little trans kids. They ain't had, the rod's done been spared, and look at them children. They're spoiled.
I'm this stuff honestly makes me speechless. I don't get it. I mean, you know, when I was younger, if people don't quote unquote approve of these parents, what they're doing, they don't like what these kids are doing, great.
Stay away from them.
Whatever happened to...
It's just say you hate this program, find another one.
Yeah, find another one. You don't like what they're doing?
But see, that's not the way the authoritarian mindset works. Everyone must be bent to the will of the authority figure.
I mean,
I think we need to call Greg Asbot, start referring to Greg Asbot as Vladimir Asbotskievich.
Vladimir Asbotskievich. That's a good one. That's a good one.
Thank
you. But you understand where I have plenty of whatever, people I don't like, whatever. And I just avoid them. I don't understand. I don't.
Well, I mean, look.
And I don't mean the.
Here's the reality. I mean, I know the parent of a trans teen in Alabama. And while all the focus is on Texas right now, Alabama's chugging right along too. And they're gonna pass a bill to ban medical care. And they've already passed a bill to keep trans kids from going potty in school. I mean, you'd think these Republicans were, I don't know, potty trained at fucking gunpoint or something. Because they're so obsessed with bathrooms. And I don't know what they'd do if an actual, because these are the people who do it. You know, they're all worried about what's going to happen to their precious daughters in the potty. They're probably absolutely unaware of how vicious girls can be to other girls and the violence that takes place in restrooms, in schools. But they're also apparently unaware that absolutely cis male guys are the ones who violate girls' bathrooms, not little trans kids, not people pretending to be trans. But they don't care about them because they really don't care about the little girls, trans or cis. This is a means of oppression and social control of a group group that they think their God does not approve of. I know you'll think that my argument is convoluted and perhaps just far too attenuated, and maybe my prose is too prolix. But that's Catch 22 reference.
I was like, maybe my prose is too prolix. I like that.
That's Catch 22. But the fact is, these are all everything. I've said it about abortion. The same thing applies to this. These are all attempts to establish a state religion. Every one of these culture war issues is at its core fundamentally a violation of the First Amendment. Because all of these principles come not from science nor from philosophy. They come from fundamentalist religious ideology. You know, I heard some very well-spoken guest talking to Hallie Jackson on MSNBC shortly before airtime, and he was talking about an article about Leah Thomas in Sports Illustrated, and he was talking about how balanced and well-written it is. I got to go find it now. But he said, you know, he said, some of the opponents of trans girls in athletics have extraordinarily strong feminist resumes relative to women's sports. And I'm thinking, buddy, you've never heard the term TERF, have you? And it's not feminism at all. It's just bigotry.
trans-exclusionary radical feminists.
Right, right.
And, you know, shitty human being is a much better term, but that it's hard to broadcast that. But that's who they are. And all of this stuff has been well documented. And some of it does come from the so-called left. But the vast majority of it coming out of state houses in places like Alabama and Missouri and Iowa and Texas. I mean, like I said, Iowa signed a trans, Iowa's governor, the same woman who gave the response to the State of the Union Tuesday night. She signed a bill into law today, I think, that bans, we say bans trans kids from athletics. It bans trans girls from athletics. And more accurately, it deprives trans girls of a portion of their constitutional right, because most states consider a public education a constitutional right. It deprives them of a portion of their right to an education. And eventually, you know, it's setting up a separate but equal situation. And it can't stand. But they have been so successful with their pearl clutching and their hand wringing, even in the face of next to no damn data whatsoever, that they're winning.
And I think the other thing too is this is something you and I have talked about a million times. Like it or not, the right is much better at messaging.
Well, and they're certainly better at messaging on this. And the side that believes in the rights of little trans kids has been particularly horrible, because we get lost in legalistic jargon and stuff that makes people's eyes roll back in their heads. But I think it's actually kind of a winner to talk about this as a violation of First Amendment rights, because it is an attempt to establish a state religion.
Yeah, I agree with that, and I think on the like the shit that's going on in Texas and Alabama, we need to frame it as it's the parents' rights and the kids' rights it's the parents' right to raise their children as they see fit. Stay the fuck out. You don't want me objecting to you raising your kids to be, you know, little Christian Nazis. Great. You go do that, fine. Leave me alone. I'm going to raise my kid, and I'm going to support my kid however I see fit.
But you see where this ultimately goes, and I know you've got to go. Ultimately, this winds up with more. When Brown versus Board of Education was passed, you had white flight to create the Christian academies.
I see what you're saying.
So what you're going to wind up with upon enforcement, you know, if the Biden administration decides to press this, and I hope they do, you'll wind up with a new version, and it'll be cis flight again to little Christian academies, and it goes hand in glove with the arguments being made, and it was successfully made in Virginia, and that's how these hate groups were able to get Glenn Youngkin into office. What we need is school choice. And when they say school choice, what they mean is they want to use tax dollars to support religion industry indoctrination schools that discriminate freely against whoever it is they hate at that particular moment.
You know, that's, let me tell you something else we need to do about messaging. You know how we shorten what you just said?
Do tell me, because I can't.
Christian madrasas.
Yes. Of course, that's kind of Islamophobic, because not all madrasas are bad.
I know, but you know what? Messaging is all about in putting putting something in some people's heads. But okay, fine. Not all madrasas are bad.
Oh, hashtag not all madrasas, sure.
Yeah. But the ones that aren't bad are going to know they're not bad. And the intention here is not to, it's not to paint all madrasas as bad or all parochial schools as bad. It's to look, Robin, we have to be better at messaging.
You get no pushback from me on that. By the way, Matt wrote in and said, preach, Sister Robin. Yes, sister, at the core, it stems from that book by Mr. Gideon, so to speak. I've been hearing it my entire gay life. Oh, I know.
No, it's Mr. Giddy Up. Hello. Hello, Matt. The Giddy Up Bible. Hello.
Yeah, I know. Giddy Up Bible.
Paul's letter to the Lilliputians. It's all in there.
Yeah, third flip-floppians.
Oh, you mean three flip-floppians.
Yes.
And on that fun note.
Two Carnivalians walk into a bar.
Two Corinthians. I love the Corinthian leather. I miss those Chryslers.
Oh, my God. Well, maybe Frederick Douglass will make some new Corinthian leather. I don't know.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah, I know.
Because in Virginia, they're going to make sure that the little school children get taught about the debate between Abraham Lincoln and Frederick Douglass.
And Frederick Douglass.
Mr. That's Douglass!
Right. You know what's so sad? We're not making any of this up.
No!
That's what's so sad.
This is real. Oh, you got it. You on the way out the door, you got a cowbell for the Giddy Up Bible.
Oh.
That's from Billable Rick.
Thank you. I kind of like Christian Madrasa. And I understand, you know, it paints a wide brush, but listen, we are in a war, and we're in a messaging war. And there always is collateral damage in messaging wars. And unfortunately, the collateral damage in this case is going to be the exceptions. But if we win the argument, or if we win the battle, then the good ones are going to benefit. I mean, I've even gone so far as to say or to think that painting, you know, particularly reprehensible candidates, maybe not as gay, but calling them homo sapiens and thespians. Because you know damn well there's going to be ignoramuses out there that are going to hear homo sapiens and you know what they're going to think, and they're going to hear thespians, and you know.
Well,
what
why do you
think.
why do you think evangelical fundamentalist amosexuals has been part of the program for so long?
Okay,
amosexual is just another way of saying gun humper. And I saw a picture today, and I think it was real, of a guy, sort of. Using a shotgun as an impromptu stool and literally resting his ass on the barrel of the shotgun.
On the barrel of the gun.
Happiness, Robin, is a warm gun.
Robin, that reminds me of the infamous story my dad told one time of being on a fishing trip up in Canada and watched the guy in the boat using a lighter, a little Bic lighter, to see if there was gasoline in the tank.
Works every time. The sad thing is that actually happened at a nuclear power plant in Alabama. They were looking for about 18 miles from where I grew up, used to be the biggest nuclear reactor in the United States, and maybe in the world until the Russians built one bigger. I think it melted. But they were looking for a gas leak in lines. They were looking for a gas leak with a candle, and they found one.
Oh, And that's not from Idiocracy.
No, no, that's just from Robin growing up in Northwest Alabama. Probably not the best place to build a nuclear power plant, but, you know, it was close to Huntsville, and they were already doing rockets and shit. A lot of smart people up there.
See, that down there, that's not a nuclear power plant.
That's nuclear.
That's nuclear. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yes, yeah. Exactly.
And in point of fact, they have a hard time now with climate change being what it is, because the Tennessee River is too damned hot to cool the rods now. Okay, we have breaking news. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa. Oh. Limited ceasefire reached for civilian. Well, can't open it because it's a Washington fucking Post. And it's behind paywall. Hold on here. Let me see if I can see it in Skype. Russia-Ukraine live updates. Negotiators agree to temporary ceasefire, something humanitarian.
I'm looking in some of like the CBC.
And by the way, Todd added a few minutes ago, we have Russia-based cells here that include our lawmaking suggesters and legislators. Hell yeah.
Well, I know it.
And we, come on. Remember Marina Butina? I wonder where Marina is right now.
Yeah. Speaking of her, did you see the thing where a New York court said that the attorney general does not have a right to dissolve the NRA?
Oh, yeah. I saw a story confirming some of what we had suspected about what's going on in the Manhattan District Attorney's office. That new district attorney is nothing to write home about.
Well, he's nothing to write anywhere about.
And he's gone to ground and won't say anything. And I forget which news outlet it was that pursued a Freedom of Information Act request. But apparently those two prosecutors left so fast they didn't even send a goodbye email. Which is actually kind of, I mean, you know, under those circumstances, it's kind of strange.
Yeah, it is very, very strange. Which tells me that they wanted to send, well, the noisy message.
Sometimes the music is in the notes that aren't played.
Exactly. I don't see anything about this ceasefire anywhere.
Well, it's at the Washington. They've agreed to corridors of evacuation, Randy Radar tells me.
Okay, I don't see it at the New York Times.
Let me look here and see if.
Oh, okay, right here. Here's at the New York Times. You know what? I'm going to do this. I have a Times. Let me see if I can't PDF this article, then I could send it to you. Shit.
Elon Musk sends an important warning to Ukrainians. Shut up.
Yeah. I'm going to commit harakiri. Well, thank you.
It might be okay. It's showing up in Apple News. Yeah, there it is.
Okay, you got it.
Ukraine, Russia make progress on evacuation corridors as war rages. Agreed on the need to set up humanitarian corridors and a possible ceasefire around them for Ukrainian civilians fleeing the war.
Okay. Yeah, I don't see it. I mean, this is like super duper breaking news from what it sounds like. So there's probably very few details.
And in Moscow, Putin said, "No, no, no. War is invasion is going according to plan." Yeah. Okay.
Get this shit. Along with North Korea and Syria, a former German chancellor stands with Putin.
What the hell? Which one is that?
Gerhard Schröder.
Ugh. Here's another weird story. Israel's Holocaust Museum asked the U.S. not to sanction Russian oligarch Roman Abramovich because he's one of the biggest donors to the Holocaust Museum.
That's just awful.
That is awful. And this is the same guy who's trying to sell the Chelsea Football Club in the English Premier League.
Right. Yeah, there's been all kinds of shit. People, I mean, they are going through Murdoch-itis in the UK with you know, British Trump and Murdoch. It's just, I listen to shit and it's like, oh my God, it's just like it was here with Trump. It's exactly the same thing. Pure poison.
Yeah.
Pure poison. Listen, my good dear, my good, sweet, southern, my sweet southern bale, I do need to run.
I understand.
I'm looking forward to tomorrow night to talk some more about this stuff because that's the only way I know. That's the only way that I know I can make sense of it is just to talk it out with people and hear perspectives because it's.
Yeah, it makes your head swim after a while.
Yeah, it does because I don't know what to make of it. This is some look. You and I grew up. We are post World War II people. Well, we're post Vietnam. Well, I mean, not really, but probably neither one of us remember all that much about it. And that was not the same as World War II.
No.
I mean, we're not used to seeing Europe at war. Let's be honest here.
Yeah. War, I mean, you know, you got Chechnya, you got Georgia, you got, I mean, Hungary, the Prague Spring, 1968. But mostly they've not been shooting at each other for a while. And nobody puts on an abattoir quite like Europe does.
No, I get
you know, we tend to think in terms of the First World War and the Second World War, but Jesus, there was the Franco-Prussian War, the Napoleonic Wars. You know, part of the reason the United States gained its independence was because Great Britain was kind of busy dealing with Mr. Bonaparte.
Mm-hmm. Well, excuse me, sorry.
Quite all right.
I didn't get a chance to mute. But listen, I will see you, hear you on the flip side tomorrow night, okay?
All right, you take care.
Take care of yourself, okay?
See you, Steve. Bye. My buddy Steve calling from New York. One of the things that President Zelensky got really wrought about and gets wrought about everything, it was Tuesday when he was doing an interview with BBC 4 and his chief of staff, Andrei Yermak, interrupted and said, we'd like to inform you that now it's Russia bombing Babyn Yar. And I did not know this until I started reading about it. Babyn Yar is a gulch in Kyiv. I'm trying to learn how to say that. It's really difficult. In September 1941, Nazis murdered 34,000 Jews at Babyn Yar. Virtually every Jew in Kyiv was killed that month. Moreover, they killed around 100,000 Jews and non-Jews at Babyn Yar. It was a giant mass grave. And it has memorials on it to the murdered Jews of Babyn Yar. And yeah, Zelensky, live in the interview, said, "Now, Babyn Yar," and yes, said Chief of Staff Yermak, "yes, the memorial. They started building it after 80 years of the Holocaust. 80 years after the Holocaust." Zelensky, disgusted, said, "That's Russia. My congratulations." And so now we have this story about the Israeli Holocaust Museum saying, "Take it easy on Roman Abramovich. He's one of our biggest funders." The letter that was written praised Roman Abramovich, one of Putin's oligarch buddies, for his investments, philanthropy, and significant contributions to Israel. They went on and said Abramovich sanctioning him would be unfair and negatively impact Israel and the Jewish world. This is bad PR management. And by the way, a few minutes left in the program if anybody wants to jump in. But a little bit of January 6th update. Simone Gold. That would actually be Dr. Simone Gold, one of the founders of the barking, grunting, madder than a hatter on the good quality mercury America's frontline doctors. Remember the ones who jumped out there at the beginning of the pandemic and were trying to get everybody to take hydroxychloroquine? Well, it turns out that Dr. Simone Gold was also there on January 6th and sashayed into the Capitol building with the rest of the maggots. She had a hearing today, remotely, and she entered a guilty plea in exchange for some degree of leniency as long as she participates with or cooperates with other investigations into the January 6th insurrection. May she sing loudly. There was some other piece of... January 6th. Information. Dadgummit. Testimony in the trial that's underway in Washington, D.C. As I mentioned the other night, Guy Reffitt is on trial. And today, his 19-year-old son, Jackson, appeared and took the oath and testified as a witness for the prosecution. He testified that Daddy, Guy, went to 3%er militia meetings in Texas and that he became increasingly violent in his rhetoric after Nitwit Nero lost in November 20th. Jackson Reffitt described himself as paranoid about Daddy's plans, and that Daddy talked about doing something big and talking about how he wanted to see a new civil war in the United States. One point saying, "We're about to rise up. Look at Mayberry versus Madison in 1803. It'll help explain this scenario." That's Mayberry versus Madison, yes. Nip it! And Jackson Reffitt got so freaked out, he eventually dropped the dime on Daddy. And then there's another free percenter. Or was it an oath keeper? I can't keep the oath keepers and the free percenters separate. But he... this guy was in Talabama. And he's been charged. And he's agreed to sing. Another... from all walks of life, they came to Washington on January 6th to assault the idea of constitutional governance in the United States. And this brings in Carol Kaczynski. I've never heard of this person. Carol Kaczynski was a TV chef who was at one point referred to as America's first gluten-free only TV chef. And, well, apparently she was near the first floor northwest doors of the Capitol at approximately 2:19 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, January 6, 2021. And FBI Task Force Officer Sean Walsh said he then found her on the video. And she's right there, moving right along through the Capitol. They went in and they were out by 2:51 p.m. So they were about a half an hour. And in the request for a warrant, Agent Walsh said she did knowingly enter or remain in any restricted building or grounds without lawful authority to do, and knowingly and with intent to impede or disrupt the orderly conduct of government business or official functions, engage in disorderly or disruptive conduct in or within such proximity to any restricted building or grounds when or so that such conduct in fact impedes or disrupts the orderly conduct of government business or official functions. And of course she was barking and grunting and hooting like a maggot will. Or in legal terms, uttering loud, threatening, or abusive language, or engaging in disorderly or disruptive conduct. And apparently she's been a fairly frequent guest on Daytime Tampa by NBC affiliate WFLA. She's been doing that shtick since 2009. And she was specialized in gluten-free recipes for folks with celiac disease or an intolerance to gluten, dairy, peanut, grain, or other allergenic elements. And founder and editor-in-chief of Simply Gluten-Free magazine. And somehow or another, though, she went from Simply Gluten-Free to MAGA. I don't think that happens organically. People were herded toward Washington by people with lots and lots and lots and lots of money. One of the things that it's expected to be heard of the Taliban maggot, the free percenter or the oath keeper, whatever he was, is that he has information that goes further up the chain of command, as it were. And he may be able to name names. And, you know, in many ways, this resembles a drug prosecution. You take somebody low level and you offer them a deal in exchange for them giving up the higher ups. Meanwhile, the petty little man down at Mar-a-Lardass, the world, it could be on the brink of war, but no, it's all about him.
Governor Doug Ducey of Arizona saw the big primary numbers in Texas where Trump endorsements went 33 wins and no losses, and he said, knowing I would never endorse him, no thanks, I'm not going to run for Senate. Smart move, Doug. There's no room for rhinos. I guess that means we can call this week 34-0.
Doug Ducey's a rhino. A guy who said a white nationalist in the Arizona State Senate would be better than a competent Democrat. You get the idea he's coming apart a little bit? The paranoid ramblings? Day in and day out?
The actual conspiracy to defraud the United States was the Democrats rigging the election and the fake news media and the Unselect Committee covering it up.
He thinks he's so clever, the Unselect Committee. Do you think he will be braying and prattling that bullshit all the way to his long home? God almighty. All right, Carol Kaczynski, do your vocal warm-up so you can sing. I really think that much is important. We need a very specific graph or chart, power mapping, sometimes called. Oh, and the article that I mentioned with Steve a moment ago about the two prosecutors, Carrie Dunn and Mark Pomerantz, who sort of abruptly quit the Manhattan DA's office. The Manhattan DA's office responded to a Freedom of Information Act request from the Daily Beast. And the Daily Beast reporting that the duo had grown frustrated that the newly elected DA, Alvin Bragg Jr., wouldn't even read memos about the case for weeks at a time and seemed to ditch plans to eventually indict former President Donald Trump himself. And what the Beast found out was that they not only wrote resignation letters, they wrote so extensively about the slow-moving probe that the DA's office would not turn over copies of the letters, claiming that the letters would reveal too much information. The criminal matter both individuals were assigned remains pending. As such, the public release of the letters, which reflect internal deliberations and opinions about an ongoing investigation, will likely interfere with that investigation. Further, the documents reference matters attending a grand jury proceeding, which is exempt from disclosure. But it does note that they quit so abruptly that they didn't even send goodbye emails to their team. We know that because the Manhattan DA's office said, those things don't exist. That didn't happen. Oh. Gee, thanks, Alvin Bragg. Great work, buddy. Hell of a Thursday, huh? Pretty obvious by now, says Randy Radar, that Trump is being protected. You know, that goes to what Julian Ann Arbor was talking about. That he sure does seem like a made man. Oh, and just because it's Thorn in the Side Thursday, and this seems an appropriate way to end the program, enter State Representative Danny Bentley, Republican, Russell County, Kentucky. Now, he's a pharmacist. And, of course, there in the Commonwealth of Kentucky stand, they've been debating an omnibus anti-abortion bill. Not ominous, omnibus. And in the course of that debate, well, State Representative Danny Bentley, the pharmacist, because of course, said that RU486, which is chemical, the chemical name is mifepristone, and according to the Louisville Courier Journal, in the course of the debate, said, well, RU486 began its life during World War II, and they called it Zyklon B. And the Nazis used it to execute millions of Jews in gas chambers, and the person who developed it was a Jew. And then he started prattling on because a Democratic member of the legislature there, the House in Kentucky, Representative Mary Lou Marzian, she's from Louisville, filed an amendment to this omnibus anti-abortion bill saying that Jewish women should be exempted from any abortion restrictions because, as she claimed, the Jewish faith doesn't think life begins at conception. Which was kind of clever, really, because she was basically saying what I've been arguing all along, is that all of these anti-abortion bills are grounded in a desire to establish a state religion, one that says that a woman has no right to control the workings of her reproductive organs. And so, having argued that a Jew developed Zyklon B, which became the morning after pill, the abortion pill, this genius, Danny Bentley, then, well, having never learned the first law of holes, and that, of course, is that when you're in one, stop digging. Nope, he kept shoveling away. Well, since we brought up the Hebrew family today, did you know that a Jewish woman has less cancer of the cervix than any other race in this country or this world? Why is that? Because the Jewish women only have one sex partner. They don't have multiple sex partners. To say that the Jewish people approve of this drug now is wrong. And for the most part, people just sat there and looked at him like a cow looking at a new gate. Until State Senator Karen Berg of Louisville interviewed, said, the first clinical trials on this drug in the 1980s has nothing to do with World War II and has nothing to do with the Holocaust. That the developer was indeed of Jewish descent, what difference does that make and why is that being brought up on the floor? So the American Jewish Committee, the Jewish Community Relations Council of the Jewish Federation of Louisville and the National Council of Jewish Women's Louisville Section got busy and referred to Representative Bentley's little monologue as bizarre anti-Semitic rant that included outlandish claims about the sex lives of Jewish women. And you might recall not too long back, we were talking about the two Republican lawmakers also in Kentucky who were engaged in a colloquy over a budgeting item, said, you know what, you need to Jew them down a little bit. Yeah, y'all need to Jew them down a little bit. They spend a little bit less money. They'll take less money. Jew them down some. And once again, proof that a Republican does not know how to give a damned apology. Because Representative Bentley, the pharmacist, said, I meant absolutely no harm in my comments today and sincerely apologize for any they caused. Once again, putting the burden on the offended for being offended. I meant absolutely no harm in my comments today and sincerely apologize for anything they caused. I apologize if my comments today cause similar pain or any doubt. I stand with the Jewish community against hatred. if, like I said, prepositions in English are so damn devilish. Representing Bentley, if he was sincere in his apology, would simply have said, I sincerely apologize. And let go all that if my comments today. If. That means he's not sure. And then, of course, there's the excuse. My intention was to speak as a pharmacist to the history of RU486 and respond to a proposed amendment. I clearly should have been more sensitive with my comments. No, you shouldn't have been insane with your comments. Your comments were false. You are a liar. You were talking about a history that exists only in the thin gray settlings that slosh around betwixt your ears and pass for brains. And Brother Deacon says, of course, the GU women's get it fewer cases of cervical cancers. Why else would the GUs develop and put those space lasers to use, you dumb son bitch? Daughter of, thank you. But yet, God. It's who they are. And I-O-K-I-Y-A-R. Sure enough. So here we are at the end of the program. The end of this Thorn in the Side Thursday. I'm going to get my I'm going to go soak in the tub and get my tweezers out and still start pulling thorns out of my out of my leg. Yowch. Thanks so much for answering Joey and Giraffe and Junior and Joey 2's challenge, Cecilia. And thank you, Yuki, for have a show on me that actually answered Bruce's memorial challenge. And that means that tomorrow we will be looking at $480 to finish this first partial week of March. Hope you'll join in for Friday on the front porch. It's always a rousing conversation. Women welcome. Always. Thanks to all of our Patreon and PayPal subscribers for your kind gifts. Thank you, our a la carte contributors. Thank you to each and every one of you who shares your precious finite time engaging in this program. In whatever manner you so choose. Thanks to our news ninjas. Thank you, Sparky. Thanks for the note, Steve. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa, headon.live. Brand new fresh Malloy on the way at 9 p.m., I hope, Eastern Standard Time. Best place to listen to the first run of Malloy is headon.live. Thanks, John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, 20 plus years at the forefront of the struggle for human rights and environmental justice, and now a union shop. Please stay safe. Vaccines, boosters, KN95, N95 masks, don't put them down yet. This thing ain't over. Wash your hands, don't touch your face, use your hand sanitizer, maintain your social distance, and for God's sakes, if some old Kentucky pharmacist comes a-burbling to you with a jug in one hand and a cross in the other, well, the Jew women, they don't have sex but with one feller. Avoid that person like the plague, because he is. Later.